Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Greg Knapp. I'm filling in for Dr. Savage on The Savage Nation. You can jump in at 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-SAVAGE. You can check out some of these stories online at michaelsavage.com. And don't forget to pick up Dr. Savage's new book, Stop the Coming Civil War, all available at michaelsavage.com. Jump on in on that. Lots to do this hour. I want to start off, I want to talk about this new border bill coming out of the Republican House Committee. And it really just keeps asking the question, are these so-called Republicans going to do what they told you they were going to do when they swept into power in the House and the Senate this last election cycle? Because it doesn't look like it. And it doesn't even look like they're trying to lead America and explain why this amnesty is so wrong, is totally against, really, the sovereignty of this nation. As Dr. Savage talks about with borders, language, and culture, totally screws that up. You look at countries that haven't been able to control their own borders and haven't been able to determine who comes in, and you see breakdowns, and you're seeing it in Europe. You've seen it in Canada, where they have, you know, areas in Canada, of course, where French and English competing, the different cultures, the different languages, and how it really has hurt them. This is supposed to be the great melting pot, and it's turning into the great salad bowl, or the not-so-great salad bowl. That has nothing to do with whether you like or dislike someone, or hate or dislike someone, or whether the person is white, brown, green, or polka dot. But that's how the liberals position it, that somehow you want to enforce the laws of the land, which we all agreed to, and that makes you a racist. And that's what they use to shut people up. And the Republicans are so afraid of being called that they won't even come out and explain why it's actually unfair to the American people to grant this amnesty, and why it's uncaring for the American citizen, the American worker, and the legal immigrant who's doing everything by the book to give these special considerations for people who broke the law to come in. But they're not even leading on it. We're going to get to that. And then, of course, you know what's going on with the Richie Riches in Switzerland right now. Wait until you hear what one American billionaire says you need to do as an American. Oh, it's going to blow you away. It's going to blow you away. That's too good. And then, speaking of really rich dudes, and by the way, I have nothing against really rich dudes who earn their money. I would love to be a really rich dude. I'm hoping someday, before I die, I'll be a super rich dude from what I earned. There's nothing wrong with being rich. And, you know, as long as you got it legitimately. So one of the guys from Google says the internet will disappear. What? What do you mean disappear? I like the internet. We'll get you all of that this hour of the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you onto the program. 855-400-SAVAGE, and you are in. All right, so let's start with what's going on with this border bill. The House Committee has passed this border security bill, as they're calling it. Republican-led House Committee. Remember, they're the guys in charge. They're the ones who won in part by saying, we're going to stop Obama's amnesty. And so what they've done is they've passed this so-called border security bill. Why do you say so-called? We'll get to that in a minute. It came out on a party-line vote, 18 to 12. The chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security, Representative Michael McCaul of Texas, said, for God's sakes, if we can't unite around border security, what can we unite around? Of course, a lot of the Democrats didn't like it. They said there were unrealistic mandates in it. They said the idea that you're really going to stop all the people coming in illegally is ridiculous. Well, here's the thing. This bill spends $10 billion and does nothing to deport illegal aliens. Wait, what? But it's a border security bill. Well, yeah, they're trying to stop them before they get in. Once they get in, I don't know if we're going to do anything. But, by golly, we're going to do more to stop them from getting in. Are you going to build that fence? Remember the fence? You guys remember? I mean, I know it was a long time ago, and it's hard to remember. But there was this law that went into effect in 2006 that mandated 700 miles of double-layer border fencing. 700 miles. Guess how many miles of that double-layer border fencing has been built as of now? You ready? What, 400? No. All right, 300 miles? No. All right, 200 miles. I mean, they were supposed to build 700 miles, you know, 9 years ago. At least 200 miles, right? No. 27 miles. Daily Caller reporting 27 miles of effective double-layer fencing so far along the 2,000-mile border. What? But it was the law. The law. Come on. Wake up, dude. The law. As if we have to follow the law. And by the way, they changed the law, amended it a little bit. 2008. We can't really. Look, you were upset. Everybody was mad. So we did what you wanted us to do. And then when you weren't paying attention anymore and you were back to watching Dancing with the Stars, we changed it. Yeah, it's great. By the way, where they have actually put in the double layer fencing, the crossings dropped by 90%. But it will never work if we do it all the way across. Right. Okay, it won't work. Won't work. Except it does every time you put it in. Where the double layer fence has been put in, it has worked. The American people are behind this, and yet we put in 27 miles. So this new bill that they're pushing, spend $10 billion in new equipment and not send one single illegal alien home. It's geared to handling the tight security of the actual border, Paul Bedard writes, not how illegal aliens are handled once they get across. Now, here's Zach Taylor, chairman of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers. Listen to what he says. As long as sanctuary cities, those are the cities that refuse to do anything about illegal aliens, as long as sanctuary cities, welfare, education, and jobs, and principally lack of enforcement and enabling by the federal government are made available to the undocumented alien, we will not be able to secure the physical border. That's Zach Taylor, chairman of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers. Then you have Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican, who's been really conservative on this. He says, the key conservative immigrant, he says, it does not end catch and release. It does not require mandatory detention and return. It does not include worksite enforcement. It does not close dangerous asylum and national security loopholes. It does not cut off access to federal welfare. It does not require completion of the border fence. It delays and weakens the long-standing unfulfilled statutory requirement for a biometric entry-exit visa tracking system. Other than that, it's perfect. I mean, what does it do? Well, $10 billion for some more Border Patrol agents and, you know, some more really cool electronic gizmos. But weren't we told that the virtual fence was a complete failure and they quit putting that up? Well, yeah, but now it's going to work this time. I mean, it's $10 billion. And we're adding more fencing. They're adding, like, you know, really ineffective one single layer, sometimes chain link fence. That's what they're doing. Wow. 2006 law requiring 700 miles of double fencing, and they modified it in 2008 to allow the construction of ineffective single-layer fences to replace the required double-layer fencing. But hey, they mean it. They're really, really on it this time. They're serious. See, and here's the thing. The American people want them to combat the amnesty. They want the border secure, and these guys aren't listening. They're just not listening. You know, and here's the thing, too. The Republicans aren't leading on this. Where are the Republicans getting out, making the case against President Obama's amnesty and against illegal immigration? As the Democrats and the liberals try to say, well, these people, these Republicans, they're evil. They hate brown people. They hate Hispanics. If you're for enforcing our laws, you must hate brown people. You're racist. Instead, why aren't they up there saying, wait a second, why don't you liberals care about the United States citizen? Isn't that who we're supposed to be looking out for? Are we supposed to be, as congresspeople, looking out for the United States citizen or for illegal aliens who are coming in illegally? Who do we represent? Number one. Number two, totally understand why people would want to come here. If I was born in any other country in the world, I'd want to come to the United States too. But it's pretty clear we can't take everybody. So then we actually need to enforce our laws, right? Because otherwise, why do we have them? And you know what? I care about somebody who wants to come to this country illegally, and I wish their country would take better care of them. And we allow 2 million legal immigrants every year, but what about the legal United States citizen who works a low-skilled job who's going to have his wages go down? What about the United States citizen small business owner who's having difficulty competing because some of his competition is hiring illegal workers and paying them a substandard wage under the table and not giving them any benefits, and he's trying to do it the right way, and he's being outbid in contract after contract? What about him? What about the American citizen who's having his identity stolen and his Social Security number stolen by people who are in this country illegally? What about him? What about the Americans who are being victimized by crime from some of the gang members who are coming in illegally into this country? What about the fact now that we have what they call OTMs other than Mexicans from countries that are designated as state terrorists, as terrorists by our State Department? What about our safety? What about all this? What about that don't you care about? But they're not. They're not leading on that. See, I'm a first-generation American, and this isn't a liberal or conservative thing, really. This is a common-sense, right-thing-to-do thing. You enforce the laws on the book. You go after the businesses that are illegally employing people. You do what you took an oath to do, which is uphold the laws of the land. And then, once you've done all that, then you can say, well, maybe we need to increase the guest worker program or whatever it is that you think we might need to do. But don't you do this first? I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do? President Obama took an oath, and he's breaking it. And he's going around Congress to do it. And he's talking about giving legal amnesty to 4 million people. It's not amnesty. Okay, let me ask you something. Did Ronald Reagan do amnesty in 1986? Well, yeah, that was amnesty. Right, and 3 million illegal aliens were made legal. Right, that was amnesty. Okay, but this isn't amnesty because they have to pay a fine. You had to pay a fine under Ronald Reagan, too. Yeah, well, this time you have to pay your taxes. You had to pay your taxes under Ronald Reagan, too. Well, this time you're going to have to actually start to learn English. Same thing under Ronald Reagan's amnesty. Everything that is in this one was in the Ronald Reagan amnesty, and yet they're not calling this one amnesty. It's interesting, isn't it? And now they're doing $10 billion. We're going to get into how they're really messing up the amnesty part of this, too. Going after Obama's amnesty and how they're blowing that in just a second. Let me start, though, with Jaden, KSFO. Jaden, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's Jaden out of Oakland. I just want to say you're incredibly wrong because I bet you all my savings account, you would definitely eat at a restaurant. You wouldn't check the back kitchen area. See who's slaving their fingers to the bone, and U.S. stole their land from Mexico. Look at Texas, look at California, and now look at decades, hundreds of years later, you hear white people saying, oh, well, it's our land, we're going to protect our borders. Well, hey, what about our
Hey, Jaden, do you know who a lot of the Mexicans stole their land from?
I think Tom Lackis, and you need to butt.
Oh, thanks, Jaden. He doesn't want to go back as far as you want to go. Everybody stole land from everybody. Eventually, right? It's not stealing. It's called a war. And they lost and we won. And you could go back as far as you want. When the Spaniards came over and took it from the people who were already living in Mexico, right? How about the American Indians here, right? Native Americans. You can't call them American Indians. Native Americans. Wait a second. They weren't native either. They walked across the strait, through Alaska, right? So who... It depends on how far back you want to go. But, Jaden, guess what? I used to work in a kitchen washing dishes. Then I used to work in a restaurant as a busboy. Then I worked in a restaurant as a waiter, slaving your fingers to the bone. No, working. It was a job. And you know what? You're right. I don't go into every restaurant I go and ask for the papers of everybody working there because that's not my job. That's the job of our government, and they're not doing it. And it's unfair to the people who are here legally and are U.S. citizens who want those jobs too, by the way. Why in the world can't you see that? Hey, appreciate the call, though, man. Thanks for getting in, brother. I would love for you to sound off. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. We'll get your calls in just a second. This is the Savage Nation. I'm Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth.
Hey, how you doing? This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage. You can go online to michaelsavage.com. Stop the Coming Civil War is his new book, and 855-400-SAVAGE gets you in. We're talking about the Republicans not living up to the hype of really stopping the illegal alien problem. Their new $10 billion security measure bill doesn't look like it's really going to do what they told you they were going to do, and it doesn't look like their plans to stop amnesty are going to work either. We'll get into that in a moment. Want to get some of your thoughts, of course, as well. Let me start with Gary, WABC. Gary, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead. Hey, Gary. All right, we lost Gary. No problem. Let's go to Paul in Detroit. Paul, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
Oh, hey, Greg. I want to mention that last guy, Jay, I hope he knows. I mean, everyone's going to blame Columbus for, destroying everything. But South America speaks Spanish, not Italian. So the Spanish did take South America.
I know. That was my point. It's like, how far back does he want to go? You know, who took what? When?
In South America don't have their language. It was all stolen, changing to Spanish.
Right. So really, the Spaniards stole some of North America from the Indians, and we just stole it back.
I get pushed around.
All countries' borders are made by wars. It's ridiculous. We shouldn't even waste our time on it. But there are people who really believe what Jay called in to say, that we stole it from the Mexicans, and the Mexicans have every right to steal it back. I mean, that's even beyond the idea of whether amnesty should be allowed or not, but it really shows you just how far some people are willing to go on this. But the main thing that we're talking about right now is these Republicans swept into office, in part, all the new guys said, yes, we're against amnesty. Obama doesn't have the right to do this. He's going around Congress. Yes, we're going to be serious about making sure that our border is secure. We're going to make sure that we stop this amnesty. And I'm going to give you the details on how what they're doing is going to fail. And I think they know it. And I actually think they may be doing it on purpose. What? Okay, we're going to get to it in just a second. Meanwhile, some great, great new polls about how most of America doesn't want this amnesty. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Border fence, and leaves a lot of people saying, is this what we were promised? And then there's this other part, the amnesty. And already now, Politico has this piece about a plan B from the Republicans. The Republicans could pass a new bill to beef up security at the U.S.-Mexico border. We were just talking about that. They could sue to overturn Obama's unilateral protections for millions of undocumented immigrants. Or they could pass yet another short-term Department of Homeland Security funding measure, giving the Republicans more time to approve a strategy. But see, the Republicans are worried that if they don't fund the Department of Homeland Security, the Democrats and the president will paint them as not caring about your security with all this terror going on around the world. Well, but that's easy. All you have to do is say, we're funding all of the Department of Homeland Security except for Customs and Immigration. That's all. Just that department until you get rid of the amnesty. That's all you have to do, right? And then Obama would have to sign off or refuse to sign off on all the funding for the Department of Homeland Security that would actually protect us. And try and take that to the American people when the Republicans can say, wait a second, we already passed all that. All we're talking about is this little sliver over here that has nothing to do with terrorism and has everything to do with President Obama's amnesty that went around Congress. Will they even do that? Probably not, because it makes you think they really don't want to. Because the anti-amnesty provision they have passed in the House didn't just go after Obama's amnesty of 4 million illegal alien adults. It went after the so-called DREAM amnesty executive order for children, and it went after the so-called Morton memos, right? And the problem with that is those other policies that we're talking about, most people are a little squiffly on those. And the deal is, if you're going to get enough Senate Democrats to pass this and enough to overturn an Obama veto, why would you throw all those things into one bill when you know you're not going to get enough Democrats to overturn a veto on those? Are they doing it on purpose so they can tell you they tried when they really know it's not going to, because they're afraid of being called racist? Which, to me, is ridiculous because this bill has nothing to do with racism whatsoever. I don't care what country you come from. I don't care what color your skin is. Just come legally. Let me get Emmett in from KSFO. Emmett, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappen for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yes, Greg, how you doing? I have a problem. I'm an immigrant, and I've been living here in the United States for many years, and I've went through the legal processes properly by spending thousands of dollars and lawyers and fees and all that, and I was wondering, will the government be paying me back for all that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Emmett, you were serious.
Through the back
right.
door, you know, it's just a
no, Emmett, how many years did it take you to, through the system?
Honestly, it took me like close to nearly 9 years.
And how much money did you spend during those 9 years?
Sure, thousands. Thousands of dollars on lawyer fees, on the immigration paperwork and all, and it's not fair for us.
It's not fair at all. Exactly. They don't seem to care about you, Emmett. Supposedly, see, now, I care about you, and I think that you've been given a raw deal, and yet somehow I'm the bad guy, and the people who are going to say, well, too bad, Emmett, who cares about you? I'm going to help these people who came illegally and broke all the rules to get in. Somehow they're the good guys. See, this is the part that these Republicans aren't getting, and they aren't getting it through. Emmett, sorry. That's all I can say, man. Sorry that this happened to you, and now you're getting screwed again. You did it the right way, and I wish you all the best, and I hope that you will have a fantastic American dream now that you've gone through the process. But, yeah, it's not fair. You're absolutely right. Let me get Sarah in, WMAL. Sarah, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp filling in. Go right ahead.
Hello. Thank you so much. Emmett, I went through it, too, with my husband. He did it legally. And I feel terrible because he grew up very poor. We spent a lot of money. And now here in the D.C. area, that we call it Little El Salvador, now the people have been told the only people getting hired are Hispanics and people from India. I like both people very much, but thank you for talking about compassion for the Americans, sir, because we're the innocents. We've been put upon. You know, in John it says if you come over, if you don't come through the gate, you're a thief and a liar. We're being made seem so bad.
Well, and Sarah, you're bringing up another point about the higher-end workers, the STEM workers, you know, science, technology, and math and engineering guys, that they're trying to expand that, too, to basically unlimited visas for that when we have more people graduating with STEM degrees right now than we have STEM jobs. So how can they tell us that there aren't enough qualified people in America to take those jobs when we're graduating more people than there are jobs? It doesn't make any sense. It's that they want the cheaper labor, plain and simple.
Right, right. But there's also something far more nefarious going on, and I think that you suspect it too, because I know the man that was given the task of building the border fence in the Bush era, and Bush did not use what the right company. He did not use as much of the infrastructure. He didn't use everything. And something for several years after Reagan, or maybe during Reagan even, there's somebody that's trying to tear this country down.
Well, Sarah, I don't know about all that. Thanks for the call. And I don't know about all the contracting. All I know is it didn't seem like either party really wanted to build this thing. When you're supposed to, by law, build 700 miles of a double-layer fence and you build 27 miles in 9 years, then somebody didn't want to build. And it sure wasn't us. The American people wanted it done. By the way, speaking of a wall, did you see what Saudi Arabia's been doing? Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud, is a little bit worried about ISIS. Okay, ISIS wants to take over Mecca and Medina. ISIS does not think the Saudi Arabians are Muslim enough. Okay, and they're building a wall. The Saudis are building a 600-mile-long barrier. Now, you can't even call it a fence or a wall. IBD points out 5 layers of fencing. Underground movement sensors, radar cameras. They've got 30,000 troops ordered to the border last July after the ISIS forces were sweeping into western Iraq. These guys are getting serious about it, and they believe they can do something about it. Somehow we can't. Let me get Tony in, WJJR in Michigan. Tony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Yes, I'd like to say one thing. The problem with our Republican Party right now is we got some younger guys in there. The old fogies that were still there, they haven't got any backbone. They cut down the people we have voted in. And these guys, if they don't do something right away, we are going to lose the 2016 election. We won't have a Republican president.
I think you're right. And you know what? It will be their fault. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it. I mean, if you get in and you don't do what you say you were going to do, and you keep telling us, well, we just need one more election. See, we have to have the Republican president, too, and then we'll really do what we told you we were going to do. I'm not buying that. I don't know about you. Remember when we had George W. Bush and a Republican House in the Senate? Well, obviously, we're really going to cut spending then, right? And we're really going to cut the debt then, right? And we're really going to... Spending went up. Debt went up. I mean, did we do tax reform then? Nope. Well, at least Bush did some tax cuts, but did we do true corporate tax reform and individual tax reform? Maybe a flat tax, maybe a fair tax? Nope. How many times are they going to fool us? And it starts to get on your nerves. Just a little bit. Let me get Jose, WBAP. Jose, you are on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in.
Hey, Greg. Hey, Jose, Houston. Hey.
Houston, I'm sorry.
A long time ago here in Dallas on KLIF.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it.
I want to let you know something. I'm an illegal alien, business owner, okay? And I'll let you know, those kids, I have three kids, okay? They're all American citizens. At the 21 years of age, they're going to be able to give me papers no matter what. If they're going to give me papers in Mexico, okay, when I go there without any education, or if they're going to give me papers here with a good education and actually produce something, it's up to you, Republicans. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't. Because hold on a second, Jose. You're telling me that you are here illegally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Illegally. You're here illegally.
Yes.
Okay, and you own a business here.
Yes.
That's amazing to me. Jose, why do you think you have the right to be here illegally?
I don't have the right to be here illegally, but everybody looks for better opportunities. Okay.
And I totally understand that. I totally get that. But can you understand why a country says that it has the right to control its borders and determine who should come in?
Look, most of...
No, wait. You have to answer my question. Do you understand why a country should have the right to secure its borders and choose who is allowed to come in?
Sir, for me, you close that border. You seal that thing up 100%. Okay.
You're not answering my question. You are not answering my question. Should a country have the right to determine who is allowed to come in legally?
Of course.
Thank you. That's it. That's all I need from you. Thanks for the call. No, I'm sorry, because all you're going to do now is waste our time. You know that that's what should happen. What the point is that you want to come in. Dude, I get that. You know how many people like you, Jose, want to come in? There are 5 billion people on the planet poorer than the people in Mexico. You admit we should have the right to determine who comes in. Listen, I understand why you came here. I would probably try too if I were you. But you even understand why we can't do this. I mean, really, if you look in your heart of hearts, you know why we cannot do it. And it's not because we hate you, or we hate brown people, or we hate Mexicans. That's total nonsense to distract from the actual question. And the question was very simple, the one I asked, and you answered it because you know, yes, every nation should have the right to determine its borders and determine who should come in, because otherwise they'll be overrun. And the border, culture, and language, once that's destroyed, so is the country. And you know that. I appreciate you getting in, and I appreciate you being honest with it. My name is Greg Knapp. I'm in for the doctor, and this is the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver.
Hey! My name is Greg Knapp. I'm in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. You can jump in as well at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE, michaelsavage.com. And don't forget his new book, Stop the Coming Civil War, by Dr. Michael Savage. I got to take you to Davos for just a minute. You know, all the super elite rich people are flying in on their private jets, and I love the super elite rich who earn their way into that club legitimately. You know why? Because the way you become super rich legitimately is you give other people what they want. Zig Ziglar had a great quote. You can get everything you want in this world by giving other people what they want. Right? I mean, that's how you do it. Now, Steve Jobs did it. He had people lining up around the block and waiting for days to give him their money. Willingly, joyfully, to buy the Apple products. That's a legitimate way to become a billionaire. That's awesome. You're creating new stuff. You're creating new wealth. You're doing stuff that people love so much, they're willing to wait in line for days and say, please, please take my money. Can I buy two? Can I buy three? No, there's a limit. Oh, man, I want to buy more. That's awesome. But what blows my mind is when these people act like complete idiots. And I'm like, how did they get rich? All right, listen to this. Jeff Green, U.S. billionaire, made his fortune betting against subprime mortgage securities. He flew into Davos on his own private jet with his wife, children, two nannies, and then he said, America's lifestyle expectations are far too high and need to be adjusted. Yes, American lifestyle expectations are far too high, need to be adjusted so we have less things and a smaller, better existence. We need to reinvent our whole system of life. But you fly around in your own private jet. Right. You have two nannies. Yeah. You're worth $3 billion and you spend money like it's going out of style. Well, sure, but everybody else needs to readjust their lifestyle in America because you're just trying to do too much. What do you think? 2013, he spoke of owning a $2 million Cessna Caravan seaplane that he saved, that it saved him valuable time commuting between his homes in Palm Beach and the Hamptons and New York, and would cut his commute. And it was just really, really cool. Which I say, great, good for you. So why in the world do you think you have the right to tell the rest of us we need to adjust our lifestyle? You know what? He's right. I do need to adjust my lifestyle. I need to adjust my lifestyle up. I want every American to adjust their lifestyle up by creating wealth. This idea that there's some kind of a pie, and if you get more, I get less. If I get more, you get less, is totally ridiculous. I'm not in competition with you. You're not in competition with me. We should be cooperating to grow the wealth everywhere. There isn't, look, there is no limited pie. We make pies in America. And you know how we know that? Because every year until recently, we have been expanding our economy. Even the last 5 years, it's been slow economic growth, but we've been expanding it. If there was some fixed pie, then how can you do that? And until recently, middle class incomes, household incomes, had been going up. Now they've gone down under Obama, even during his so-called recovery. But before that, they had been. When you start redistributing the income, though, you start killing that. Look at Venezuela. Venezuela, with all their natural resources, they've gone so socialist, they're destroying their country. Inflation through the roof, shortages of everything people need. That's not the path to prosperity. The path to prosperity is what we've been doing. Well, what we used to do. So the idea that we need to have less in our life and adjust our lifestyle? From the billionaire flying around in his private jet. What do you think? Those are the kind of guys that get people mad at the rich. I'm not mad at the rich. I want to be rich. I just want them to do it legitimately and help everybody do better. And that's really how you get rich in America. This is the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hey, how you doing? This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. Yes, it is his unprotected talk. I don't know if you have any safe radio listening habits, but you may need to employ them right about now. 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. You can go to michaelsavage.com for more of the stories we talk about. And don't forget to check out Dr. Savage's new book, Stop the Coming Civil War, all available at michaelsavage.com. All right, so this hour, we've got to talk about Deflategate. What? We're going to talk about football? Come on, man. Well, there's some important stuff going on around the world. Okay, well, hold on a second. First of all, you can't talk about the, quote, important stuff all the time. Sometimes you need a break. You know, that's why we love sports in America. It's an escape. It's a fantasy. Now, if it becomes your number one focus, yeah, we got a problem. And we know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that that is their number one focus, and they're living in this weird fantasy world with their fantasy team, and they're spending more time on that than they are their job and their family combined. So, yeah, that's a problem. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with a little escape. And there's one other part to this story. You know, Dr. Savage always talks about borders, language, and culture. Well, football is a big part of American culture. And you got to figure out why. And from Pee Wee football through Friday Night Lights at the high school level to the increasing popularity of college football to the number one most popular sport in America, professional NFL football, gets the best ratings of any other sporting event on TV. There is a culture here, and we are a football nation, and we have a football culture. And what does that mean? And what does it mean if one of the best teams in the world is cheating? And what does that mean to our culture? And are we a nation of cheaters? So I want to get into that. You won't believe what the IRS just did. It's going to blow you away. Crazy, crazy stuff. And a dean of a school of journalism here in the United States, ready to say that the First Amendment, certainly not absolute, and there are times when you cross the line, and drawing a cartoon of Muhammad is crossing the line. What? So we're going to give the terrorists a veto on what you can do? Yep, yep, that's pretty much it. We're going to get you all that coming up this hour, the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor. You can jump in at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE, and you're on board. So you know the story by now, Deflategate, that the football is supposed to be between 12.5 and 13.5 PSI, pounds per square inch. Evidently, if you underinflate the ball, it's easier for a quarterback with smaller hands to grip and supposedly easier to catch. The way they found out about this during the AFC Championship game between the New England Patriots and the Indianapolis Colts could be twofold. One, the guy that intercepted for the Colts brought it over to the sideline and said, man, this ball feels funny. And then it went down the line and the trickle effect finally got to the referee. The other is that the Ravens warned the Colts that, hey, these guys were using underinflated balls last week. Now, at halftime, evidently, the ref went back and started looking at these balls and realized that the New England Patriots footballs were underinflated. See, each team brings their own footballs. And before the game, the referee inspects each and every one of these balls, 12 for the New England Patriots, 12 for the Indianapolis Colts. A couple hours before the game, they check them. All right, everything's good. They're all in the right pounds per square inch. They put them in bags. You're not allowed to touch them until the game starts. Then they're given to the ball boys. That's it. Well, at some point, they're saying somebody, they don't know who, had to take some of the air out of the balls. 11 of the 12 balls were underinflated on the New England Patriots side of the field. But by halftime, they figured this out, reinflated the balls. Second half, everybody playing with inflated footballs. And by the way, it was 17-7 at halftime. It turned out to be 45-7 at the end of the game. So I don't think that's what changed this game. In fact, one of the Indianapolis Colts put out a tweet today, and it's Dwayne Allen, and he tweeted out, Patriots could have used soap for balls and still won. Simply the better team. We have to continue to build. So, you know, he's admitting it. Look, man, this wasn't it. But it's got everybody talking. It's going to be a huge story throughout this Super Bowl. And people are saying, you know, Bill Belichick was caught before in Spygate, where they were using video cameras to try to steal the defensive signals of the other team. He got fined for it big time. Now it looks like they were cheating with underinflating the balls. So now Coach Belichick's legacy is being questioned. His integrity, his character is being questioned. And whether or not this team is on the up and up or whether they're a bunch of cheaters. So it brings up a lot of questions on this, right? Look, we know and we believe in using the rules for an advantage. I mean, that's American. Look at how many times we do that in baseball, trying to find an edge. You remember when you were in Little League? I know I did this. I played first base. And every once in a while, with a guy that was taking a lot of leads, we'd do this thing where I'd go out and talk to the pitcher. We'd be talking. He'd slide the baseball into my glove. He stayed off the rubber. I'd go back to first base, and when the guy started to take his lead, I'd tag him, and he was out. That's an unsportsmanlike thing to do. It's within the rules, isn't it? It's within the rules. Now, if you go outside those rules and start cheating, that's a whole nother issue. I mean, look at football. Within the rules, they came up with basically this new fast break football, right? Where you run a play, and you quickly get up to the line as fast as you can, and if you do it quickly enough, the other team can't substitute. And football is so much about substituting for matchups that you can get these guys tired, these defensive guys. You can get them to the point where they're not matched up correctly on the field, and you can really take advantage of that. There's nothing in the rules against that. In fact, I think it's genius that a couple of these coaches started doing it. How about spiking the ball in a two-minute drill? That's not really a pass. Why was that allowed? Well, it's just using the rules to your advantage, right? You want to stop the clock. Spike the ball real quickly. Why isn't that intentional grounding? Well, you know, they kind of work this thing out. So finding a way to win and finding a way to get an advantage, that's part of the American culture, isn't it? And we do it all the time. We do it in business. We do it in our education. We do it in sports. We do it everywhere we can to say, okay, what are the rules? Tell me the rules, and I'm going to then do whatever I can inside those rules to get an advantage because I want to win. Is there anything wrong with that? That's as American as apple pie. That's American, man. But when you go beyond that and you start cheating, now what? That's not American. What happened to cheaters never win? What happened to what you want to teach your kids on how to do things the right way? And how does that spill over into things like business? Into things like not being a man of your word, not living up to a contract, acting like it's okay as long as I get ahead. The ends justify the means. Is that becoming part of American culture? And is that good for us? See, I don't even understand the whole idea of cheating because I did that one time when I was a kid. I was about 8 years old, racing my buddy around the block on a bike. Just him and I. And I cheated to win. Cheated to win the bike race. Cut a corner. And I felt so empty with that victory. And I knew what I had done was so wrong that I vowed to myself I was never going to do it again, and I never have since. What's the point of winning if you cheat? You don't have the real victory. And I'm wondering how many of the New England Patriots, in their heart of hearts, feel that this is taking away from their AFC Championship victory and don't want to play this way. What do you think? All right, well, the coach, Belichick, was out in front of the press today, and Tom Brady, the quarterback, is going to be in front of the press very soon. We'll see if we can get you some of that. So he was talking about the idea of, you know, what was legal, what wasn't legal, and what he knew and what he didn't know. Guys, you say we do or do not have that audio ready to go from Coach Belichick? Okay, good. Let's start with Coach Belichick on inflating the footballs. Cut four, please. Here's Coach Belichick.
In the future, we will certainly inflate the footballs above that low level to account for any possible change during the game.
So what he's saying is, look, the lowest level is 12.5 pounds per square inch. The top level is 13.5 pounds. We'll get it higher so that if it loses anything during the game, we won't look bad. But it sounds like it was a lot lower than just a little bit, or they wouldn't be making a big deal about this, right? Although I do have another question for you. Did anybody check the inflation of the footballs for the Indianapolis Colts during that game? Because, see, we're also finding out more and more football players, former football players, are coming out and they're talking about, well, we always mess with the balls. We scuffed them up. We did this or that or the other with them. Some of the quarterbacks say, I like the football to be underinflated. Some say, I like the football to be overinflated. It sounds like this might go on more than we know. And because there are a lot of people who really hate the Patriots because they've been winning too much, they may be trying to find a way to make them look bad. I don't know. I mean, the entire investigation isn't done. But Coach Belichick is saying he didn't really even know much about how this whole football process works. Cut five.
Again, my overall knowledge of football specifications, the overall process that happens on game day with the footballs is very limited.
Do you think really Coach Belichick doesn't know what's going on with these footballs? You think Tom Brady doesn't know what's going on with these footballs? That he wants them a certain way? He's said in the past that he likes the underinflated ball. He's going to talk later today. We'll see what he has to say. But my point of this is, what does this say about American culture? What does it say about cheating and how we look at cheating in all walks of life? This is the biggest game in the world coming up. And it looks like one of the teams may have gotten there by cheating. What does that say? Oh, they would have won anyway. Okay, then why did they do it? Why would you do this? Why would you even have the possibility of tarnishing this great achievement by doing something like this? What does it say about our culture? 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board. 855-400-SAVAGE. And wait till you hear what the IRS just did. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm in for Dr. Savage. My name's Greg Knapp. This is the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, how you doing? My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor on the Savage Nation. Don't forget to get his book, Stop the Coming Civil War, on michaelsavage.com. And you can join in at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. File this under our government never learns or doesn't care, or there must be some weird lobbyist thing going on here, because you remember CGI Federal? Have you heard of CGI Federal? CGI Federal are the people who botched the whole healthcare.gov website. Remember that? Where nobody could log in, you couldn't get on, you couldn't buy it, you couldn't sign up. It is a Montreal-based company that bungled the healthcare.gov website so badly that we finally pulled the plug on the company. January 2014. Well, the Daily Caller now reporting, 7 months after we said, all right, you guys are gone, we can't use you guys, you're horrible. After Kathleen Sebelius submitted, oh, this is awful, I'm just as frustrated as you are. Got rid of them, right? 7 months later, the IRS has now signed a new contract with CGI to provide critical functions and management support for its new tax program for Obamacare. Wait, these are the guys that blew healthcare.gov, right? Yeah. And now you're going to use them again? Yes. $4.6 million. Wait, these are the guys that tried to run the healthcare sites for Vermont and Massachusetts in both of those states. Those liberal states got rid of them, right? Well, yeah. I mean, last year, they both fired CGI, Vermont and Massachusetts, for failing to deliver on their Obamacare websites. And the one in Massachusetts never worked. The state spent $170 million on it to CGI. Vermont, they pulled the plug on it after the system failed to work for 10 months. $66.7 million down the drain. And yet, we just hired them again. What'd you expect? I mean, hey, you got to give them a second chance. Come on. Who do they know, man? Who is getting their back scratched on this one? Who's getting some money out of this deal? How does that happen? What is wrong with us? Meanwhile, an update on the idea of free speech. Of course, you know what happened in France with the Charlie Hebdo magazine and the Islamofascist terrorists that go in there and they kill people for drawing cartoons. Craziness. And everybody jumped up. Je suis Charlie. I am Charlie. Yes, we stand up for free speech. We understand. But anytime you put a but behind I'm for free speech, but, then you're not really for free speech. Well, but wait a second, Greg. You understand that, you know, you can't run up to somebody and threaten to kill them. I mean, correct. That's not really free speech. We're talking about free speech like the free speech that doesn't incite a riot, that doesn't personally attack someone and threaten someone. But we have very, very small limits on free speech for very limited reasons, right? Well, Dwayne Hickman, who is the dean of Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication, wrote a column for the USA Today where he basically says the terrorists have the right to decide what is free speech and what isn't. What? No, that's not what he said. Well, kind of is. He says that Charlie Hebdo crosses the line. Its latest depiction of the Prophet Muhammad. And once again, I'll say, as I've said many times on the radio, isn't it interesting how most of the mainstream press says the Prophet Muhammad? Do they say the Savior Jesus Christ? Do they say the Prophet Moses? Do they say, no, 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 the Prophet Muhammad? Well, he's not my prophet. How about their Prophet Muhammad? Or how about just Muhammad? I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows who you're talking about. It's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, so, say, Charlie Hebdo's latest depiction of Muhammad, a repeat of the very action that is thought to have sparked the murderous attack on its office, predictably has given rise to widespread violence in nations with large Muslim populations. See? Charlie Hebdo crossed the line. And what they're doing is toxic. And even the Pope says you shouldn't have the right to make fun of the faith of others. No, no, no. That's what makes free speech free. We'll talk about it more in a second. This is the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knappin for The Doctrine.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'm gonna invite in Netanyahu to talk. What? What? Why would you invite? You have no right to do that. We'll get to it in a minute, but this is unbelievably troubling to me. You've got a dean of a journalism school in the United States of America, Dwayne Wickham, Morgan State University, School of Global Journalism and Communication, talking about the fact that, well, you know, sure, there's free speech, but Charlie Hebdo magazine crossed the line. I mean, they knew that this was going to upset extremist Muslims and maybe end up killing people. So why in the world would you do it? So what you're saying is that the terrorists get to tell you what you can and can't print in a magazine? Well, no, no, I'm not saying that. Yeah, you are. That's exactly what you're saying. By the way, I thought it was only a few extremists. But he says this, Dwayne Wickham. The most current issue of Charlie Hebdo, again, has Muhammad on its cover. This time, he appears crying under a headline that reads, "All is forgiven." Well, apparently not. 10 people have been killed during protests in Niger, a former French colony. Other anti-French riots have erupted from North Africa to Asia. Okay, so wait a second. If only extremists would kill over a cartoon, then why are you saying this is happening in so many different places? Seems kind of weird, doesn't it? Pope Francis has said of the magazine, "You cannot make fun of the faith of others." You know what? The Pope is wrong. Of course you can. Of course you can. That's what free speech means. Free speech is to protect a speech that other people find offensive. Otherwise, you wouldn't need that protection. I mean, hello? By the way, that magazine, Charlie Hebdo, did make fun of Christianity, too. Mocking cartoons of Jesus Christ, of the Virgin Mary, of nuns, of the Pope. And you have every right to not like it. You have every right to protest it. You have every right to try to organize a boycott against it. What you don't have the right to do is say, "You can't do it, or we're going to kill you." Yeah, that's kind of a problem. And then what's really another problem is Dwayne Hickam, the dean of Morgan State's journalism school, doesn't seem to really understand all of our law about the First Amendment. He goes, well, 1919 Supreme Court ruled, speech that presents a clear and present danger is not protected by the First Amendment. Crying fire in a quiet and uninhabited place is one thing, but, you know, you can't do it falsely in a theater to cause a panic. Right. Well, that's totally different than drawing a cartoon in a magazine, dude. Don't you? You don't get that? Well, 22 years later, the court ruled that forms of expression that inflict injury or tend to incite an immediate breach of the peace are fighting words, not protected by the First Amendment. And if Charlie Hebdo's irreverent portrayal of Muhammad before the January 7 attack wasn't thought to constitute fighting words or a clear and present danger, there should be no doubt that the newspaper's continued mocking of the Islamic prophet incites violence. Okay, first of all, let's look at the Supreme Court deal. That clear and present danger test is gone. Now we have something called the Brandenburg test. And what it says is, if you have some very narrow circumstances, you can then criminalize incitement of a riot. And it's very difficult to prove. Extremely difficult to prove. And it's certainly not from something like a cartoon in a magazine. How about the fighting words doctrine? We all know about that, right? Well, do you know right now it's limited to direct personal insults? And the direct personal insult has to be face-to-face. That's not the same thing as a magazine drawing a cartoon. Not even close. But think about this. Here is a dean of a journalism school teaching our future journalists that the terrorists should have a veto on what they can print. Does that sound good to you? That's amazing. That's unbelievably amazing to me. Meanwhile, Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air reporting on Tuesday, Barack Obama defended his policy of emptying out Gitmo, right? But guess what? One of the men transferred from Gitmo worked to establish a new ISIS cell in Afghanistan after several years of working as a Taliban commander, Mullah Abdul Rauf Kadim. He was in Gitmo for years, then returned to Afghanistan, then became a leader of the Taliban. Now he has left the Taliban, has joined in with ISIS, and is trying to get more of the Taliban to renege from being part of their group and joining ISIS. But yeah, we should just keep emptying out Guantanamo Bay. I mean, those guys, they were all just goat herders. They were all goat herders before this started. I don't understand why we're even worried about these guys. Just let them all out. Absolutely. Hey, let me get Gary in, WABC, on the Charlie Hebdo thing and this journalism dean here in America saying, well, you know, you can only take free speech so far. Gary, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Okay, first I'm going to say something to America. America is headed for a demographic winter, okay? And what took place in France was obviously outrageous, but you got to remember, those phony world non-leaders all got together a week later. They are the architects of open borders. They invited the mayhem into Western civilization, folks. They invited them in. And if you really look at it really close, the fix is in, because Guantanamo Bay, 600 terrorists have been sent home who got better health care coverage than our veterans, folks. Remember that. The guy who shot the Pope, they released him. The guy who bombed Pan Am 101, that terrorist, they released him. This is going on. Look at it all. It happened with Bush. He released him. Obongo's releasing him out of Guantanamo Bay.
No, you're right. Both presidents did this. Both of them caved in. Well, I think Bush caved into some pressure to do it, and I think Obama wants to do it. And so you're right. Both sides have done it. And we've seen these people who've been released under both presidents return to the battlefield, and yet we continue to do it. And it's suicide. And you're right, Gary, that Europe has done this, and now we're doing it too. And it's all under the name of multiculturalism, right? This idea that, you know, every culture is of equal value. Well, no, I'm sorry, it's not. The culture of Sharia law is not equal to our culture. It's just not. And we can absolutely exist by taking in people from all around the world into this country. We can exist that way. It's how we've really grown this country. And it is a great thing to have a melting pot, doing it legally the right way. But we can't exist with multiculturalism. We need one culture. We need an American culture. And you need to melt into that to be an American. Otherwise, you're right, it's suicide. And you're seeing it in Europe. You're seeing it. And you're seeing why some of the people in Europe now are starting to push back on it. And somehow they're called all the names because they're like, wait a second, we kind of like being English. We kind of like being German. We kind of like being Italian. We kind of like being French. And we think that means something. And we like our culture. And we do think our culture is the best culture in our country, and it should be what everybody melts into if you join it. And it's the same thing in America. We think our culture is the best. That doesn't mean that you can't speak another language. It doesn't mean you can't remember where you came from. It doesn't matter that you can't eat some foods from the old country. But it does mean you need to melt in, you need to learn the language, and you need to understand that you don't get to come to this country and change it to the culture you want to, because otherwise, why did you leave? If I took my family and moved to China tomorrow, would I expect the Chinese to speak English? Would I expect them to start eating like I do? Would I expect them to start living by the same kind of laws and belief system that I do here? No. It's their country. No, that's a great point. I appreciate you getting in on it. Let me get George in Jacksonville, Florida. George, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Yes, the previous caller is going to be hard to top. That was an excellent response from him. I've logged over 5,000 hours and 9 years into Michael Savage. You do a wonderful job substituting for him.
Thank you, George.
Our commander-in-chief, or excuse me, our communist-in-chief said, was talking about Charlie Hebdo, and he said, well, we believe in free speech. However, I question his judgment. Say what?
Yeah. It's the same thing he said, remember, in the UN about the YouTube video. Remember? Where he's like, well, of course we have the right to do this, but, you know, you're right, George. That's the kind of stuff that he does. And when you do that, you're really saying, no, that you have a terrorist veto. It's the terrorist veto. No, we don't allow that in America. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you getting in. You can jump in as well at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. And then let's turn to what's going on in Iran, okay? Where, if you recall, the Obama administration said, look, guys, we're going to deal with Iran. We're going to negotiate with Iran. We got 6 months here to get this thing done. We're going to get it done. Don't worry. This is the last time. Everything's good. They're actually listening to us. We're slowing them down. They're not really continuing to work on their nuclear ambitions. And yet we find out more and more. Yes, they are. And we even see some of the Iranians mocking us via Twitter, for goodness sakes. But yeah, they are working on more nuclear reactors. They are working on more nuclear material. And it's been 7 months, and they want more time. So this is in a bipartisan fashion, by the way. You got Democrats and Republicans alike saying, Mr. President, we, Congress here, we should be in on this too. And we don't think what you're doing is really getting us what we need in stopping Iran from getting nukes. And so Speaker Boehner came out and said he's inviting somebody to talk to Congress. Let's hear cut one from Speaker Boehner.
Another priority is protecting the United States and our allies overseas. That's why I've invited Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, to address a joint session of Congress on the grave threats of radical Islam and the threat that Iran poses to not only the Middle East, but frankly to the world. I did not consult with the White House. The Congress can make this decision on its own. I don't believe I'm poking anyone in the eye. There is a serious threat that exists in the world. And the president last night kind of papered over it. And the fact is that there needs to be a more serious conversation in America about how serious the threat is from radical Islamic jihadists and the threat posed by Iran.
I think that's right. Now, I'm not a big fan of Speaker Boehner, but I think he's dead on right here. Because who's going to make the case better about the problem with Iran than Netanyahu? This guy's living with the existential threat of his nation being destroyed. He's surrounded by enemies, many of whom have put in writing that they want the total destruction of Israel. How do you negotiate with people like that? If you're Israel, how do you negotiate with Hamas, who has in their charter that they want the total annihilation of Israel? How do you negotiate with that? So Boehner's invited Netanyahu to come and address Congress. Well, the White House is very upset. Didn't consult with us? Press Secretary Josh Earnest said Wednesday that Boehner's invitation is a breach of normal protocol. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The White House heard about this from Boehner's office, not from the Israelis. Well, you know what? I don't care. Look, you've been going around Congress all the time. Why shouldn't Boehner go around you? I mean, you keep talking about how we're going to veto this, going to veto that. I got a pen, I got a phone. I don't need Congress, going to go around Congress. Hey, how dare Congress go around me? I mean, really? I'm glad he's doing it. Somebody's got to stand up and tell the truth about what's going on here. They're giving a 7-month extension on these negotiations when they told us that the last time this was the last time. And now Obama in his fit of pique is now not going to meet with Netanyahu during this trip. Our only real ally in that region of the world, and he's not going to meet with him. According to the AP, Obama will not meet with Netanyahu when he travels to Washington in March, the White House said Thursday. The spokeswoman, Bernadette Meehan, said that in keeping with longstanding practice and principle, the president does not meet with heads of state or candidates in close proximity to their elections. Right. That's what it is. Or it's O's ticked off, doesn't like that Boehner went around him, doesn't really like Netanyahu. I mean, really, if you've been following this, this is another one of our allies that President Obama snubs while he treats our enemies better. Unbelievable to me. All right, let me get Steve in quickly. KSFO, San Jose. He wants to talk about that multiculturalism. Steve, go right ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to propose a multiculturalism as we do it in our family. I'm American-born. I lived in Germany for a couple of years and speak German fluently. My wife is from the Philippines. She speaks English, German, and several other languages fluently. Our children are involved with and comfortable with Philippine activities here. They're involved with German activities here, and all of them speak German fluently. We've made it a point to raise a bilingual family, and yet we are American. In fact, we very much emphasize that.
Well, see, and there you go, Steve. That's the thing. Multiculturalism really doesn't. I mean, there needs to be one culture in America this way. There needs to be the culture of the Declaration of Independence. There needs to be the culture of the Constitution. There needs to be the culture of what this nation stands for. There needs to be the culture of the melting pot. I think it's great to be bilingual. I speak Spanish to some degree, listen to Spanish tapes every day. Took Italian in college and French as well. I think that's awesome. I don't have a problem with you loving the food from the home country. I don't have a problem with you dabbling in this other stuff. But the main culture that you base your life and your belief system on needs to be the American culture, or we're going to commit suicide. I mean, really, I think it's as simple as that. Don't you? This is the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI.
This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. We're talking about Speaker Boehner saying, you know what, I don't like what this administration's doing in Iran. We're bringing in Prime Minister Netanyahu from Israel to talk about the real threat of Iran. The White House going nuts. John, you are on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead. Hey, John, go right ahead.
Yes, is this the Savage Nation?
Yes, sure. You're on the air. Go.
This is Vicky from 760 AM WJBK in Commerce, Michigan. And I would like to know what we can do as citizens instead of just wringing our hands and not being able to have these legislatures do what they should do.
I appreciate the call. We're almost out of time this hour. You know, all you can do is keep pounding them, pounding them, pounding them. And if they hear it enough from the people, they might change. This is the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hey, how you doing? This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor. You can go online to michaelsavage.com. You can join in on the program by dialing up 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. And don't forget to check out Dr. Savage's new book, Stop the Coming Civil War. You can get it at michaelsavage.com, Stop the Coming Civil War. Got to talk about what's going on with the Department of Justice and the FBI in the Michael Brown case in Ferguson. We're going to get into that in just a moment. Then we've got a police shooting that happened in New Jersey. We got some unbelievable audio from that one. Is it a situation of hands up, don't shoot, or is there something else going on in that one? And then the idea of assisted suicide is starting to grow in America. Are you for that? Or do you think it's a very slippery slope to go down? We're going to get to all that this hour of the Savage Nation. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board. Now, I'm in Kansas City, and we have been very close to this Ferguson case, obviously, because of where we're located. And I've been covering this thing from day one. And the more information you get on the Michael Brown case, the more you believe that Officer Wilson was telling the truth and that he believed his life was at risk when he shot Michael Brown. And when you look at all the evidence that has been released from the prosecutor, and you look at all the black witnesses that testified in support of what Officer Wilson said, you start to say, whoa, I see why the grand jury didn't indict this guy. And then there was a great piece, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me right now, and I forgot who did all the mathematics on this. But there was a guy, if you recall, who lived right by where the Michael Brown shooting took place. And he was chatting on his computer and recording the chat. And they verified now that the gunshots you heard on his video chat were the real gunshots that shot and killed Michael Brown. And one of these lawyers or mathematicians, I forget what, he took the audio and the sound of the gunshots and the time length of these gunshots from the time that Michael Brown stopped, turned around, and came back at the police, and the amount of time that those gunshots took to go off, from where Michael Brown started to where he ended up dying right in front of the police officer. And what he figured out with his mathematical equation, it's not that hard. You know the time, you know the distance traveled. You can figure out very quickly how fast was Michael Brown traveling to cover that distance. And he figured out Michael Brown was approaching Officer Wilson at about three times the rate a normal person walks. That's pretty fast to be coming at the officer while he's shooting you, telling you to stop. When you get all that information and you start to look at it, you understand why the grand jury decided not to indict. So now, the Justice Department, the FBI, remember Eric Holder wanted him to look and see, were Michael Brown's civil rights violated? Can we get him on a civil rights violation? Which, really, to me, this is double jeopardy. No, it's not. We're not charging him for the same thing. We're not talking about what he would go through at a state level. We're talking about the federal level. And it can't be double jeopardy here because he wasn't even charged at the state level. Okay. But what you're really trying to do is get two bites at the apple. I mean, let's just be honest about it. And quite often what they do is if they don't get convicted in one way, they try and get him another way, and it's for the same thing. They're just trying to rearrange technically what they're charging him with so they can still get him. To me, it's two bites of the apple. But guess what? The Justice Department, the FBI, were learning they've completed their investigation, and they found no evidence to support civil rights charges against Officer Wilson. None. Well, but they can still look into allegations of discriminatory traffic stops systemically throughout the Ferguson Police Department. I mean, remember, as the New York Times points out, the department is overwhelmingly white despite serving a city that is mostly black. Aha! See? So, if there's a disproportionate number of minorities pulled over and a disproportionate number of minorities arrested and a disproportionate number of minorities convicted, it must be racism. Except, you know, in Washington, D.C., the police department is majority black. And yet, they still have those same kind of stats. Same thing in Detroit. And yet, they still have those same kind of stats. So what's going on? The Justice Department plans to release a report explaining its decision, but they don't know when yet, according to the New York Times. Now, here's the thing. The FBI interviewed more than 200 people. They analyzed cell phone audio, video. They analyzed Officer Wilson's gun, his clothing, and other evidence at the FBI lab in Quantico. And even though there were two other autopsies already done on Michael Brown, Eric Holder ordered a separate autopsy done at Dover Air Force Base. And guess what? They did not uncover any facts that differed significantly from the evidence made public by the prosecutor in Missouri last year. I guess Eric Holder's racist. What? Well, I mean, hey, remember they said the only way you couldn't find anything here is if you're racist. Could it be? Could it be that Officer Wilson actually didn't do anything wrong? Tragic as it is, could that be a possibility? NAACP doesn't think so. Of course, Michael Brown's family doesn't think so. The liberal media doesn't think so. But when you actually look at the evidence, could it be? But see, the thing is, the truth doesn't matter to these people on the far left. The truth on this case doesn't even seem to matter to most in the mainstream media. There is an agenda and a narrative that they have, and they're going to fit it to this story no matter what. And the agenda and the narrative is simple. Police are systemically racist. Police are looking to kill young black men. And it's another vestige of racism that still remains in this country. It's an injustice. It's a racist system. And we have to do something to stop it. And this happens all the time. That's the narrative and that's the agenda, and it's just not true. Well, over 400 civilians are killed every year by the police. How many of those are justified? Because the person is armed or the person is attacking the officer? Do you know that actually more unarmed white people are killed by the police than unarmed black people? No, that can't be true. It's true. But that doesn't fit the agenda. It doesn't fit the narrative. Now, are there bad cops? You betcha. Absolutely. And those bad cops should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. They should be booted out of the police force. And you have to stay vigilant to make sure that happens. No doubt. But the idea that somehow this is systemic and this is normal and this is what they're looking to do is just, number one, ridiculous, and number two, not supported by the facts. What do you think? 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board. Let me get Raphael in El Paso. Raphael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question that I haven't heard any national leader answer, and that is, why can't any national leader just get on the news and say, when you're stopped by a police officer, just follow directions, follow their commands, and if you feel your civil liberties have been violated, then file a complaint against that officer, and that complaint will be taken seriously and investigated. I mean, why can't they just tell everyone, you know, take charge of your, or take responsibility for your actions if you're stopped by a police officer?
It's a great question, Raphael, and I think it's because, once again, that doesn't fit the narrative. Thanks for the call. That doesn't fit the narrative. The narrative is, it's all the cops' fault. Doesn't matter that Michael Brown had just strong-armed a convenience store clerk and stolen cigarillos 15 minutes before the incident with the officer. Doesn't matter that he was walking down the middle of the street instead of the sidewalk, blocking traffic, and wouldn't get over when the officer told him to. Doesn't matter that he slammed the door back on the cop, reached in through the open window, and started struggling and hitting the cop and trying to grab his gun. Doesn't matter that he didn't have his hands up, don't shoot, as some of the people said, when many of the others, black witnesses, supported what Officer Wilson said about that. That doesn't matter. It doesn't fit the narrative and doesn't fit the agenda. And you're right. I mean, Chris Rock has this up on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, you should type in Chris Rock and police. And you'll see this little comedy bit he did explaining how not to get your bleep beat by the police. And obviously he did it as a joke, but you know what? It's pretty right. You're right. Why hasn't that been taught? I'll tell you what. I've taught my daughters that. Look, if you get stopped by the police, and even if you think you're in the right, just follow their directions, do what they've asked you to do, and we'll work it all out when we get downtown. Because the rest of it doesn't make any sense. In fact, there's some audio I'm going to play you in just a minute of a police stop that happened in New Jersey, December the 30th. It was a black officer and a white officer working together. They stopped a car that ran a stop sign, two black men in the car. And the black passenger would not comply with what the black officer was telling him to do. And it ended tragically. And we're going to let you hear it. It's very intense. First, let me talk to Nick in Jacksonville, WBOB. Nick, you're on the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I want to talk about this whole thing with the police.
Yeah.
Michael Brown. No, I agree. Michael Brown was
Nick, I'm going to have to let you go, man. I can't understand a word you're saying. Something's wrong with your cell phone, so I'm sorry. I think you wanted to say that, the students are being taught the cops are racist, even though the facts don't support that. And, yeah, unfortunately, and you know what? That's the other part of they say there aren't enough black police officers. Well, let me ask you this. If you're being raised to believe that the police are racist and that they're bad people, why would you want to become one? Kind of makes it hard to recruit that, doesn't it? All right, let me get Steve in Indiana. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Yes. First, I want to thank you for bringing out the truth, because that's very important. And I just wanted to point out also that the left are the ones that are bigoted, and they also don't like authority. Anything they can do to destroy authority is what they will do, whether they have to twist the truth or not. But also the discrimination comes from the left. They're the ones that are trying to prove discrimination when they can't. And the other thing I'd like for you to point out is the broken family, because that's where the issue is. And it's not because of one color or another color. It's if you look at the broken family, that's where most of the crime comes from.
Oh, it is a great point. And that's spread across all cultures now and all races now and all ethnicities now. And it keeps getting worse and worse. And I do agree that there is a problem with some people that think you should, you know, fight authority just for that sake of fighting authority. Look, I'm all for fighting authority when it's wrong, but there's also a way to do that without getting into a situation that can put your life at risk. And to try to argue with a police officer the way that these things have gone down and to act like that doesn't have any impact whatsoever in how this event ends up just doesn't make any sense. And as we've said time and time again, and the left hates this too, the idea that somehow the biggest risk to a young black man as a police officer is patently ridiculous if you look at the facts. The biggest risk to the life of a young black man is another young black man. 90% of black murder victims are murdered by young black men, not by the cops. But we don't want to talk about that. All right, wait till you hear this audio from what happened in New Jersey. I'm going to let you hear what these police officers did. See what you think about this one. And we'll take your phone calls. 855-400-SAVAGE. This is the Savage Nation. My name's Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth.
855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board the program. 855-400-SAVAGE. We're talking about the situation with police officers and the times when they end up shooting civilians. Are they always in the right? No, absolutely not. But to jump to this conclusion that this is this systemic racist problem, there's no evidence that race played a factor at all in the Michael Brown case. There's no evidence racism played a factor at all in the New York Eric Garner case. But that's what they're pushing. Well, the Department of Justice, FBI, it's leaked out now. They're not going to file civil rights charges against Officer Wilson in the Ferguson case. Well, there's another one now. And this one has a video, the dash cam video of the police officers in Bridgeton, New Jersey. It happened December the 30th. Jerome Reed was killed. Now, this is a guy who has a record. He spent 13 years in prison for shooting at three state troopers. The officer, the black officer who shot him, knew who he was because the black officer was one of the ones who arrested Reed last year when he was charged with several crimes, including drug possession and obstruction. So they catch these guys running a stop sign and they pull them over to the side of the road. And when they get up there, the black officer notices that the passenger has a gun in the glove compartment. And from there, it gets really intense really quickly. And the officer keeps telling him, don't move. Keep your hands where I can see them. And he goes, I'm getting out of the car. I'm getting out of the car. No, you're not. No, you're not. He yells at him. And he does anyway. And they say, and you can't see this because it's radio, but you can look it up online. And they say, well, the guy came out with his hands up. Well, really, at the end, the passenger, the black passenger, gets out of the car, coming right at the officer with his hands coming up, but they're coming up to about chest level. And the officer, very close to him, feels threatened and shoots him. It was a black officer shooting a black suspect. Are they going to say it was racism? Take a listen to this.
What up? Right on South Pine Street. Right. Hey, you got a driver's license?
Yeah, I got my driver's license.
What's up, man? Can you go and grab it for me?
Fast, stop.
We stop.
No. Show me your hands. Show me your f***ing hands. Show me your hands. Don't f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Get him out the car, Raj. We got a gun in this glove compartment. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Show me your f***ing hands. Show me your hands. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. I'm telling you, I'm going to shoot you. You're going to be f***ing dead. I'm telling you. You reach for something, you're going to be f***ing dead. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. Keep your hands right there. Hey, Jerome, you reach for something, you're going to be f***ing dead. He's reaching. He's reaching. Show me your f***ing hands. No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. Don't f***ing move. Don't you
f***ing. Wow. That is intense. Did the police officer overreact, or did the suspect not listen and do what he was supposed to do? What do you think? 855-400-SAVAGE gets you in. 855-400-SAVAGE. This is the Savage Nation. Greg Knapp in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, how you doing? This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage, michaelsavage.com, and you can get the book Stop the Coming Civil War by Dr. Savage right now. You can also call in at 855-400-SAVAGE. And we were talking about Ferguson. Department of Justice, FBI, says, you know what, we really can't find any evidence to charge Officer Wilson for civil rights violation. Looks like the grand jury was right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what they said exactly. Okay, that's what's really happening. And then we talked about these two police officers in New Jersey. Thank God the one police officer was black, or we'd be told how it's all racist again. And you heard the intense audio. Was the police officer in the right to be able to protect himself this way with lethal force or not? And you got to watch the video and see how close he was to the officer and what the possibilities were. I do believe that there are police officers who overreact. I do believe there are police officers who are bad. I do believe there are bad shoots. But you also have to understand the intensity. Did you see a couple of weeks ago, one of the protesters, a reverend who is part of the whole hashtag Black Lives Matter protest, took the challenge up from the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office in Arizona and went through their training for real-life suspects and shooting training, virtual training. And in the training, in the first scenario that this reverend went through, the protester, he ended up getting shot and killed by the suspect, just like that, before he could even do anything to defend himself. In the second scenario, the reverend shot and killed an unarmed suspect. And when he was asked, why'd you shoot him? He was unarmed. He said, well, he was charging me, and I had to protect myself. Sound familiar? And real quickly, he understood, this is a little bit different than what you think it is when you're actually in the position. What do you think? Let me get Phil in. Phil, you are on the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, filling in. Go right ahead.
Hi, Greg. I think this really illustrates exactly the problem, and that is we're thinking about this in a way that maybe we should think about different. This is a libertarian issue. I think what we need to look at is how can we equip our police? How can we change the tools, the resources, and the methods they use in serving us and protecting us? So they don't end up in these killer-be-killed situations.
I like that. I think that's smart, and I've talked about that before, too, with all the new stuff we have with the non-lethal force things you can use, and I like that, Phil. But we have to be careful on how we do it in making sure that it's fail-proof, you know? I mean, where you can't say, well, I'm going to shoot him with a beanbag, and the other guy kills you. Because if you watch some of these training videos, somebody with a knife can close and stab you several times before you even draw your gun from a certain distance. You know, I mean, it's a lot harder than it looks on TV.
I think it is. And I think we're going to have to do it, we're going to have to dramatically rethink how we approach the whole policing.
I'm for that. I'm with you, Phil. I appreciate it. Let me try and get a couple other guys in, too. Let me get Fred in, KSFO. Fred, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Hey, yeah, that was great. That clip was really, I'm so glad you played it. It really was very intense. Is that on YouTube, the video?
I'm not sure if we have it up at michaelsavage.com, but if we don't, I think my guys can get it up right now for you. But also, if you just typed in, you know, in Google and search for it, it'll pop right up.
All right, thank you. Yeah,
yeah man, thanks for getting in. I appreciate it. Let me get Doug in as well. Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go right ahead.
Yes, how you doing?
Doing well.
I live here in Broward County, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's Fort Lauderdale. And the police departments here are fantastic. They're very good. And if you notice, we don't get riots over here. There are police shootings periodically, and everything is fine. Now, I'm from New York originally. Now, I know crooked cops in New York.
Sure. I'm not denying that there aren't any.
I understand that. But what I'm trying to say is if you have crooked cops working in the bad neighborhoods, they can't get away with it in a whitey-tidy neighborhood. They can get away with their stuff in those areas. You follow me?
Because I do follow you.
That in the whitey-tidy neighborhood, they got lawyers. They can lawyer themselves up. Everything they know, the police chief, who knows, you know, they know.
Right. So what you're saying essentially is you got to make sure that you oversee these police officers to the point that you don't allow that kind of corruption to happen in areas where it's harder to fight it. And I would agree with you. I agree with you. But that doesn't change what happened in this video. And that doesn't change what happened in Ferguson. And it doesn't change what happened on the video I saw of Eric Garner. And as much as I hated what happened in that video of Eric Garner, when you have a black female sergeant overseeing the takedown of that guy, and he's not complying, and he's saying, I'm not going to let you arrest me, what then? And that's where I think the other caller had a great point. Well, maybe we need some other way to take people down that is safer for everybody. Okay, let's start working on that. Let's find some other things. But until you do, can you hold these police officers to a standard that you would not hold yourself to if you were in that type of a situation?
Now, I understand that. But what I'm saying is certain municipalities or cities or towns or whatever, you don't know unless you live there to see how the policing is interacting. And all it needs is one little spark to set it off.
Well, thanks for the call. There's where I disagree. Look, there are. I've run into. Listen, I used to be a probation and parole officer. That was my first job out of college, and I've run into good cops, and I've run into bad cops, and I've run into cops who aren't super nice to you in the quote whitey tidy neighborhood as you talked about. That doesn't give an excuse to what we saw with the looting and the rioting when you say it will spark something in a bad neighborhood. No, it doesn't give an excuse to that. So we take care of the problem, but we don't excuse the behavior of refusing to comply with the cops, physically attacking the cops, threatening the lives of the cops, chanting, F the police, kill the police, burning down stores and looting. No, sorry, I'm not going that far. I don't think that makes any sense. 855-400-SAVAGE, get you on board. 855-400-SAVAGE. Listen, I appreciate all the great calls on that. I got a couple other things I want to get to before we run out of time this hour. And one of them is this out of the Washington Times. The assisted suicide movement is gaining traction in the United States. I'm sure you've heard of Brittany Maynard. Now, she was the 29-year-old brain cancer patient who moved to Oregon so she could, quote, die with dignity. She wanted physician-assisted suicide. She didn't want to go through the slow slide to death. And so there are a lot of people that are saying, hey, look, her case really shows we need to get rid of these laws against assisted suicide. Why shouldn't somebody be able to kill themselves if they want to? I mean, it's their life, right? And it's gaining momentum. And the Washington Times points out part of the reason it's gaining momentum is because it was no accident that this story became top of mind in the press. There's a group called Compassion and Choices. It's a right to die group. Guess who funds it? Liberal billionaire George Soros. Oh, by the way, did you see that George Soros put $3 million into the protests that were going on in Ferguson to keep those going? Well, you know, he funded all these groups that were sending protesters down, that were busing protesters in. Yeah, that came out last week. Well, he also was funding Compassion and Choices. It came out of the now defunct Hemlock Society. And according to Wesley J. Smith, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute and a euthanasia opponent, he said, it's an organized campaign funded by George Soros money, and they're using the Brittany Maynard case as their launching pad. So let's think about this for a second. There have been over 700 assisted suicides in Oregon, and not one of them got this kind of attention. What you have is a movement that looks around for just the right kind of emotional kick. You don't get this kind of international high-profile media by accident. Okay, so we know that's true. But you know what? So what? He's being smart, right? He's picking. It's just like they use Rosa Parks to really spark the civil rights movement. I mean, she was a great person to use because people could identify with her and people supported her and people liked her and people wanted to say, hey, this is wrong. It'd be a lot better to use Rosa Parks than maybe some drug addict, right? Well, same thing here. There's no problem with that. Here's the bigger question, though. Should we make this legal? Is it a slippery slope? You know, now we've got over in Europe, in some areas, they're even talking about assisted suicide for children. Well, you know, I mean, they're in a life that's just not worth living anymore. Now, here's how I think about it, and I would love your thoughts on it. It is your life. And if you are of sound mind and want to take your own life, it is your life. I personally think it's the worst choice you could ever make. Yes, I'm a Christian. I believe that you are trying to play God. And I think there's a huge difference between saying, you know what? I'm not going to have any heroic means keep me alive. I'm going to refuse treatment except for pain medication. That I don't have a problem with. And I can totally understand that, especially when you're suffering from a debilitating disease. But when you move to the point where you're going to try to say, now I want to have a doctor kill me, you're moving to a whole other level that I think really opens a huge can of worms. When you get to that level, so now we're asking a doctor who's supposed to heal people to kill people. We're putting a situation in where maybe the elderly, maybe the disabled, who are already feeling like they're a burden to their family, a burden to their friends, a burden financially, a burden emotionally. We're now putting them in a situation where they have this option of, hey, I could just have this doctor kill me and then I won't be a burden on anyone anymore. You don't think that will happen? You see how some people treat their parents already? You don't think there's going to be somebody saying, Grandma, why are you still hanging around? Why don't you just die so I can have your inheritance? I mean, you know, we have to take care of you 24 hours right now anyway. You got this 24-hour nurse. Why don't you just end it all, Grandma? Is there a possibility that people that maybe could be saved if they really fight could be? People who are disabled that, you know, right now they're feeling like their life really isn't worth it, that may change their mind in a year or two, or we may have a new cure. Is it really the way we want to go to normalize the idea of having someone assist in killing them? I don't. But I do think it's going to spread. I think it's going to spread across the nation. And as I say, it's your life to do with what you want to on your own. And there are all kinds of books written and ways to kill yourself if that's what you really think you should do. I think it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I think it's extremely selfish, and I think it's the wrong thing to do. But it's your life. But now you're trying to get somebody else involved, and you're trying to get a doctor involved, and to me, that's a whole other level. Let me get Steve in on that, North Carolina. Steve, you're in the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, filling in for the doctor. Go right ahead.
Yes, I'd like to tell you about the historical slippery slope of assisted suicide. The Holocaust got its start when the Nazis persuaded Germany's doctors that the mentally deficient and the severely handicapped would not want to live. It was a mercy to kill them. And they got their start not with the gas chambers and Auschwitz, but simply by taking these mentally deficient and severely handicapped people, putting them in trucks, driving them to the grave site while piping the exhaust gases from the truck into the back of the trucks where the passengers were, so that they were dead on arrival. And this is merciful.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you're talking about the whole eugenics movement and all the way down to the mentally deficient as they framed it, and that is a slippery slope. And we're seeing it already with selective abortions. We're seeing it with some people on the left are writing things about, yes, you should even have the right to, you know, kill an infant quickly. You know, don't let it hang around too long. But to kill an infant after birth, when obviously its life isn't worth living. Yeah, there are already people advocating that. As I said, they're already over there, you know, in the Netherlands talking about the idea of euthanasia for children. So yes, there is a history of this becoming a very slippery slope. What do you think? 855-400-SAVAGE gets you on board the program, 855-400-SAVAGE. And wait till you hear what Google Chairman Eric Schmidt said is going to happen to the Internet. We'll get you that, too. This is the Savage Nation. My name is Greg Knapp, in for the doctor.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, my name is Greg Knapp, in for Dr. Savage on the Savage Nation. MichaelSavage.com. Don't forget his book, Stop the Coming Civil War. See what Google Chairman Eric Schmidt said about the Internet? He was on a panel here in Davos, and he was asked about his predictions for the future of the web. Here's what he said. I will answer very simply. The Internet will disappear. Wait, what? The Internet's going to disappear? What are you talking about? The Internet's everywhere. I love the Internet. Well, calm down. Listen to everything he said. There will be so many IP addresses, so many devices, sensors, things that you're wearing, things that you're interacting with. You won't even sense it. It will be part of your presence all the time. Imagine you walk into a room, and the room is dynamic. And with your permission and all that, you're interacting with the things going on in the room. A highly personalized, highly interactive, and very, very interesting world emerges. All right, that's a little creepy to me. That actually scares me a little bit. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I think the Internet is an awesome thing, and I use it every day, and it really helps me. And I think it helps make people productive and connect people and helps them make money and work from home and all these great things. But do you want to be totally connected to that all the time, where we're starting to get to the point where we blend reality and virtual reality so much that you get to the point that you can't even tell the difference? Is that going to be good for us? Where we're going to not even know the difference between online relationships and real human being relationships? Is that going to be good for us? Would you like the fact that you're online all the time to the point that you never have silence in your life? I mean, think about it right now. How often do you have silence in your life? From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep, something's going on, right? The alarm clock comes on. There's the radio. You're talking to your family. You're listening to the radio in the car. You get to work and you're doing work and people are talking to you. Everything, all day long. When do you have the chance to just sit, think, and be, and create something new? Or to settle yourself? The Internet will disappear and we'll all just be part of it? I'm not so excited about that. And I'm not a Luddite. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. All right. Yeah. We'll see how it works. Hey, thanks for letting me in to your life today. Thanks, Dr. Savage. My name's Greg Knapp, Savage Nation.
Savage.